and welcome to the Stranger Times podcast. CK slash Queen McDonald here. I hope you're well. I'm not. You may have noticed with these podcasts, there has been some justifiable criticism for the long rambling intros. The good news is you won't get one today because I have what we call the COVID. I'm sure you've seen it. It's been in the news. Myself and the missus both got it. We've had it for 3 days now. Hasn't been fun. Luckily, look, we're all right, by the way. Fully vaxxed and boosted and all that stuff. So it's just pretty exhausting. Anyone who's been through it, obviously it's a very serious thing, but luckily with reasonably good help as we have and stuff, we're okay. My point is, I'm going to do this as a very quick introduction because I've basically, I want to go back to bed and the chance of me doing this before having a coughing fit are fairly slim. So let's get crack on. We're near the end of the second series, by the way, but we have an absolute delight of a treat for you today. Phil Nichol is the narrator for this. I'll be honest, I do get quite hyperbolic about people on this podcast. Let me put it this way. There are two acts in British comedy, I would say probably maybe world comedy, given that Phil's a Canadian, who are unfollowable, considered so by other comedians. Phil is one of them. You have to go and see Phil Nichol live if you ever get the chance. He is utterly incredible. He's just an energy of his performance and all that is just, you cannot describe it. It wouldn't make sense if you saw it written down. It's one of those things when you're in the room, it's a truly, truly magical thing. I have seen him do shows where he's absolutely torn rooms apart. He is very well known for it. And that's why I had to follow him once. And it's honestly terrifying. I don't care how, big name comedians and stuff are hard to follow in a certain way just because the crowd are all excited because they've just seen somebody off the telly. But put it this way, none of the big comedians you would name will ever want to follow Phil Nichol. In fact, I would be so far as to say that if you look at the lineups for any big charity gig that I have in Britain at any point, they will never put somebody on after Phil Nichol for very good reasons. Because when he hits it, it's just an incredible sight to see. He's also a man of many other talents. He's directed plays. He's acted in plays. You've seen him acting on TV and you'd recognise him if you knew Phil. He's written loads of stuff as well. Just an all-round Renaissance man, an incredible, lovely bloke. And this story is called What Is and What Should Never Be. References a Led Zeppelin song title, for any of you who don't recognise it. I came up with the idea when I was reading the book Lore. I think that's correct, it was called. Yeah, it's all about basically sort of weird little things from around the world. And I say with these things, but that's all with the Stranger Times story. Came up with one little idea of a certain folklore thing that I won't go into now because it'll spoil stuff. And that's where the idea for the whole thing came together. And also being a former drummer myself, I was always fascinated by bands like Led Zeppelin and stuff because the big rock bands and the sort of classic time of rock, you know, back when being in a band was a big thing as opposed to something where you're hoping for £4 off Spotify once every month. So yeah, this is kind of my love of rock and roll and Phil Nichol being, frankly, one of the most rock and roll comedians in the best sense of the word, is the perfect man to read it, as you're about to hear. So I am going to go lie down, genuinely impress myself. I got through this without coughing. Here's Phil Nichol reading What Is and What Should Never Be.
Do I expect you to believe me? I don't know. Probably not, but screw it. Man gets to a certain point in his life and he feels like he's got to leave a record, you know, even if it's just for himself. I've seen the world, man. All kinds of nonsense. Elton John dancing with royalty. Ozzy Osbourne freaking out on a crazy golf course. One of Huey Lewis in the news trying to headbutt the Dalai Lama. You name it, I've seen it. I don't know if the music business attracts the strange or if it just makes ordinary folks go nuts, but either way, there's no shortage of it. But this, though, this wasn't that. This was a whole other world of crazy. It was 71, and I was a roadie for Zeppelin. To be exact, I was Jimmy's guitar guy. I got the gig in Buffalo in 69 after he fired his third roadie in the North American leg. You know what he liked about me? I don't play guitar. All the other guys fancy themselves as guitar heroes, whereas me, I got two bum fingers ever since my brother whacked my hand with a snow shovel when I was 8. I ain't gonna sit around playing the axe thinking I'm something I'm not. I just got a good ear so I can tune the thing and then make sure Jimmy's got whatever he needs. Everyone else thought they could be Jimmy Page, but I knew I could be the guy to make sure Jimmy Page was Jimmy Page. Even by the lofty standards of Zeppelin tours, that thing was chaos. We'd done Europe, North America and Japan back to back, and everybody, the band, the crew, the management, everybody was exhausted. To be honest with you, all the trashing rooms and throwing TVs out the windows and stuff was overblown, but man, the feuding and the bitching was real. Bonham was drinking like his throat was on fire. Jimmy was on an Aleister Crowley trip. Plant was going full hippie, and John Paul Jones, swear to God, the man was on a serious Scrabble kick. That game, that stupid game, challenging everyone and anyone to play him. He was talking about taking some time out and going on the professional Scrabble circuit, which is not a real thing. Anyway, you know, who cares, right? As long as the shows are getting done. Then one night on the plane, Bonham agrees to play him. And he does the worst thing imaginable. He beats him. Not only that, he also immediately retires from the game of Scrabble straight after. I mean, well, JPJ was beside himself, losing his freaking mind. He's threatening to leave the tour, and Jimmy's only making it worse by hinting he'd use dark forces to assist Bonham. I mean, crazy shit. I know it sounds insane now, but you gotta remember, back then, everything around them was crazy. Hell! Insanity was their normality. It gets so bad that Grant, the manager, comes out to deal with it personally. Next thing you know, we professors in English from Oxford Uni meeting the tour for the express reason of losing to Jones at Scrabble. And it works, too. That Grant dude is a goddamn genius. He could have fixed the Middle East in an afternoon. So anyways, the tour's rolling on. It's November. We've just played the Free Trade Hall in Manchester. Beautiful room. I'll tell you, for nothing, some of the bigger places you play when the size of Zeppelin, the sound is awful. Now they've got computers and all kinds of stuff. Back then, it was just amps, a desk, and hope for the best. The Free Trade Hall, though, that place was legit. Everything sounded like it was supposed to sound. The band were flying high and everybody was lifted, because on nights like that, you remembered why you ran off and joined the circus in the first place. Soon as the show ends, the band go hang out with friends and celebrities or whatever, but the crew, we're working. We got to rip everything down and get it on the trucks, especially when we're in Leicester the next night. Let me tell you, the nights where we move, they are stressful. Crew working through until morning, trying to sleep on the truck until you got to the next stop, because you got to build the whole thing up again, get ready for sound check. And that's when you realize you got into show business and accidentally joined the army. That ain't my job, though. When the sun goes down, I had one and only one responsibility, the guitars. I got to get them out and on to the next venue, and nothing, I mean nothing, can get in the way. You got to understand this. They're like the crown jewels. The year before, Black Beauty, the guitar Jimmy's used since his session musician days, got stolen, and man, the shit hit the fan. I wasn't there, I hasten to add. Still now he's got multiple guitars because nothing feels quite right for everything, and those things are protected. Big Dave, he's like 6'8". He's the guardian of the guitars. He stands beside me when I'm working with them, holds the key when they're locked up, and Wayne travels with them in the van. Oh yeah, the guitars have their own van. Well, mostly. There's also a practice drum kit Bonham asked for, which never leaves the van, and a framed portrait of Emma Peel from the Avengers TV show, because who the hell knows? Nobody says much, but I always assumed the kit was a break glass in case of emergency type deal. You know, Bonham, sweet man, by the way, if he goes on a rampage, they can stick out the kit and calm him down, like the lady in King Kong who can chill out the monkey. So that night, we load up the guitars into the van. Nothing out of the ordinary. Big Dave had to throw out a couple of kids who wanted to touch them, because you know how fans get. But still, 45 minutes after curtain down, we are out of there. The van was driven by St. Jacob, Scottish dude. He's called that because he doesn't drink, smoke, or partake in anything else. He's some hardcore Christian or something. Don't ask me why he signed up to work with Led Zeppelin tour, because I don't have a clue. It's one of life's great mysteries. I do know why he's driving the van, though. Richard Cole, the tour manager, he might be the most wily son of a bitch I've ever met. But he knows if you're going to have a van with this cargo in it, you give it the job of driving to the most sober bastard on the planet. Now, you might think old St. Jacob sounds like he's not much fun, but that ain't the case. What he actually is a fun black hole. Never mind adding to that, he can suck the joy out of any situation. He's the most miserable individual I've ever had the misfortune to meet. His old lady left him 1 year before. Turned out the postman was delivering a lot more than letters, and since then, he just banged on and on about it. Worse still, I wasn't allowed to smoke in the van, and Big Day was banned from eating. This dude must have been 350 pounds of don't fuck with me, and he had to sit there pouting because a scrawny Scotsman runt wouldn't let him eat. You'd think there was an obvious solution to that problem, but Dave is actually a total pussycat. Softly spoken, with a stutter and an abhorrence of violence. He gave up wrestling because even the fake stuff upset him. He didn't actually threaten anybody. He didn't need to. Normally, his mere presence was threat enough. So we've loaded up and we got gone. It's Manchester in November, so it's cold and raining because, well, what else is it going to be? The saint is rattling on about how we're not going to take the motorway, how he knows a shortcut, Snake Pass. In hindsight, I remember Big Dave trying to say something about it. Before he can get it out, the saint is on to one of his riffs about his ex-wife. I curl up my jacket, lean against the door, and try to get some shut-eye. By this point, I'm able to block out Saint's non-stop diatribe. You can learn to live with anything if you try hard enough. Well, almost anything, as Saint's ex can testify. I must have dozed off, because I get jerked awake by the motion of the van taking a couple of sharp turns. Now, we're on this windy road, heading into some mountains, and the rain has turned to snow. Dave is trying to suggest turning around, but the saint is having none of it. He's giving it all, "This ain't snow, I'm from Scotland. We get real snow up there." I'm like, "Hey, I'm from Winnipeg, so I'm calling bullshit on that." And, well, we're so busy arguing about who gets more snow, we don't turn around. We're too caught up in being pig-headed dumbasses, telling each other how much worse we've seen, that we're charging through it, even when a car coming the other direction flashes us with a warning. Well, quel surprise. We hit some black ice on a bend and the car goes careening off the road. We're all in with a bad hand waiting for the river car to wipe us out. There's that moment of perfect stillness with nothing but snowflakes in the headlights dancing through the darkness. And even though you can't see it, you sense that under that darkness is several hundred feet of nothing. A whole lot of long way down. It'll kill you or make you wish it had. Then, at what felt like the very last second, the tires find purchase, the van turns, we hit a rock, and thud! Stop. For the longest time, no one says a damn thing. Saint opens his door, looks out, and closes it again with his face white as a sheet. He climbs over me, Dave and I follow slowly. It's only when we're out on the roadside that we can see how close we came. Oh, the driver's side is an inch from going over the edge. Saint goes, "Well, what are we going to do now?" And I'm not a violent dude, but I just went for him, like full-on red mist. I'm going to rip the scrawny runt's head clean off. Dave grabs me, but I'm so crazy, I'm trying to fight him off just so I can get to Saint, who stands there with that sour expression on his face, like I'm the one being unreasonable. Stupid son of a bitch, you nearly killed us all. I only stopped struggling when Big Dave screamed, and I mean screamed, not at me, just in genuine terror. Some things you just can't fake. It takes me so much by surprise that the rage leaves me. Then I noticed why he screamed. And I screamed too. There, standing in the beams of the headlights, directly behind Saint, are three figures. With God as my witness, they ain't human. At least not like any human I ever saw. They're maybe 4 feet tall, dressed in animal pelts, and their faces, noses that look more like snouts, teeth sticking out at weird angles, and warts all over them. They are, frankly, the ugliest fuckers I've ever seen, and I know a guy who once tried to kiss a high-speed train while high on acid. These little dudes are holding torches, like actual flaming torches. Saint turns around, and as soon as he sees them, he falls to his knees. Like royalty has just shown up. Dave and I, well, we're standing looking down at them like, what the hell? And he whispers one word, "Droz." Like that's supposed to mean something. He is bowing to these dudes and they're just staring at us. Then Saint says, "Please, my lords, we are weary travelers who have become waylaid. We mean no harm to you or yours." They walked forward, and after the initial shock had passed, I'm feeling pretty calm. Bar anything, I reckon, if needs be, I could dropkick one of these little pig people in the valley without breaking a sweat. And hell, I've seen Big Dave eat bigger things for lunch. Still, Saint is on the ground groveling as they walk forward. They move towards us, and one of them, I think he's the leader, he points up at me and Dave, and he's making all these grunting noises. And thinking back, I assumed he was the leader because he had the most messed up hat on. It looked like a goat skull, and I should know. I did the tour of Japan with Sabbath. So He's pointing and grunting at us, and then one of his buddies moves his torches over and illuminates the side of the van. On it, there's a big Led Zeppelin logo. Now, don't ask me why there is, but someone decided that every vehicle on the tour had to have the artwork. Me and Dave tried to point out that with our precious cargo, incognito would be the way to go, but nobody listened. Big tours are like armies, in that nobody listens to the poor grunts in the trenches. Anyway, these tros, as Saint calls them, they're pointing at the logo. And they're talking now, like, real excited. The occasional squeal in there with all the grunting. While all this is going on, Saint is still kneeling, looking like this is the second coming as opposed to some weird little pig hobbits. And I'm like, come on, man, get up. You're embarrassing yourself in front of these pig people. And he's nearly in tears going, get down on your knees. Get down. I don't know. Maybe I should have done that, but what can I say? I'm to live free or die trying for my own good, I guess. And I don't grovel to nobody, especially creatures who smell revolting. I mean, the wind changed and I had to fake a coughing fit just to stop myself from retching. So now, seems like we're done talking. The leader, Goat Skull, he points at us and he points off into the darkness. Saint says, I think they want us to go with them. And I shake my head. And you know, like every dumb tourist everywhere, I reckon I can make myself understood just by talking slow and loud. So I'm like, thanks, but no thanks. We've got to go back to our van to get on the road and get going. We've got places to be. Maybe they understood me, or just the head shake was enough, but they ain't happy. Goat Skull gives me an ugly look, which was surprising as I didn't think there was anywhere left for him to go in the ugly stakes. Saint is whimpering at me saying, don't antagonize them. I'm not trying to antagonize anyone, but freaky as these little dudes are, they don't scare me as much as the thought of leaving Jimmy Page's guitars on the side of a mountain to fend for themselves. If I lose them, I'm never working a show for anyone ever again. I'm too old to get a job selling insurance. I'm staying with the van, and that is that. End of story. Goat Skull grunts and points some more. I just shake my head. He looks like he's about to swing for me. I look at Dave as if to say, get ready. It might be time for some action. But he's standing there, open mouth, like his brain has just dribbled out of his ear. And I figure, I might have to handle this by myself. One Goat Skull squeals, and suddenly, lots of torches appear all around us. I mean, lots. But worse than that, a couple of figures stomp into the beams of the van's headlights only, and they ain't hobbit-sized. They are a couple of 8-foot-tall, giant-sized versions of the guys we've just met. Beasts! Saint starts crying, and I don't blame him. Like I said, I ain't a violent guy, but I've been in a fair share of scrapes. These odds, though, I realize I need to make nice with Goat Skull, or else it'll be me getting drop-kicked off into the darkness. One of his second-in-command guys produces a rope from somewhere and ties our hand. Another whacks me back in knees, so then Dave and I are kneeling beside Saint. The little Scottish runt's cussing me out for being a fool, and I'm too busy trying to figure out what the hell is happening to worry about it. A blindfold gets tied tightly around my eyes, and smelly and damp, and I'm too busy panicking to mind. Feels like this is going to end really badly. Suddenly, Jimmy's guitars are the least of my worries. After a little more grunting and screaming, they push us up on our feet and lead us up into the mountains. Me, the Saint, and Big Dave were all tied in a line. Prisoners is what we are. I can't see a damn thing around the blindfold. I'm shivering because I'm not dressed for the weather, and all I can do is try and shuffle in the direction we're being pushed. I got no idea how long we've been walking. Every now and then, one of us loses our footing and stumbles. I do it a couple of times, but you quickly learn to concentrate on your footing and nothing else, because every time you go down, some hairy little hand grabs your junk through your jeans. Not cool. Eventually, the sound of us changes, and I can't feel the snow falling anymore. We're inside. There's rock under my feet now, too, and the echoes of our footfall makes me think wherever we are, it's pretty big. Also, the stink is even worse. I'm breathing through my mouth as my nose has decided that it's checking out for the evening. There's running water somewhere in the distance. In some corner of my mind, I think, okay, those bastards could take a bath, but they've chosen not to. After a while, we get pushed down onto rocks. Someone pulls the blindfolds off. All three of us are sitting in a line in the middle of this immense cavern. Surrounding us in every direction are these troughs. Big ones, little ones, rows and rows of them. There must have been hundreds all staring at us. And in the middle of all these troughs, there is a throne upon which some dude with what looks like a deer skull on his head staring down at us. He's definitely got the king vibe going on. The skull is so ludicrously big on him that it's laughable. Only none of us are in any kind of laughing mood. We're surrounded, and I got visions of that deer head's being replaced with mine. Dave nudges me and points. Over to one side, I can see all the gear from the van. Part of me thinks, Christ, that's going to be a pain to carry back, which goes to show you how terrible the human mind is at dealing with the facts of a situation. Goat Skull walks over to our stuff and picks up one of Jimmy's guitar cases. Dave's looks like he's about to say something, but I kick his foot and give him a shake of my head. Now is very definitely not the time. Goat Skull walks up to the throne, presents it to the king guy. He points at the Led Zeppelin logo at the side, and with God as my witness, instead of grunting and squealing, he says, Led Zeppelin. The room is in uproar, grunts, squeals. Somewhere I swear I hear someone sing the riff to A Whole Lot of Love. The king grunts something, and Goat Skull points at us again and says it, Led Zeppelin. Saint whispers, Oh Lord. They think that we're... And I'm like, yeah, we're whatever we need to be to get the fuck out of here. Then, as if that wasn't weird enough, the king claps his hands and out comes this even smaller pig-faced hobbit dude holding a harp. He bows at us and sits down on the steps leading up to the throne. The whole room goes silent and he starts to play. Now, maybe this is some form of Stockholm syndrome or I don't know, just hallucinations brought on by the lack of fresh oxygen. But that porky little fucker was a genius. As he strums and picks away, the music comes alive, and it doesn't just fill the chamber, but molds itself to it, like he's playing the whole fucking world. Harmonics and counter melodies are bouncing off the walls, dancing with each other, swirling around the ether. The most wondrous sound I've ever heard. It took me over completely, better than any trip I've ever had. After he's finished, he sat there in perfect silence until Big Dave just starts applauding. I join in, and only then do I notice I'm crying like a baby. Not even out of fear, just hearing something that beautiful. Dave, Saint, and I applaud, but we stop pretty fast when none of the Trows join in. They just look at us, not upset or anything, just honestly confused by what we're doing. Then Goat Skull comes over and unties us and points towards the pile of gear from the van. Saint goes to say something, but I shut him up with a look. If these little pig hobbits think we're Led Zeppelin, then sure as shit, we are. I reckon it's the best option, as they don't strike me as folk that take disappointment well. We huddle around the gear, and I look at each of them in turn. All right, can anyone play guitar? Head shake. Big Dave says he can play clarinet, which is as surprising as it is useless, as we don't have one. What we have is a dozen of the world's best guitars and only one guy who can tune them real good. Sure, we didn't have an amp either, but that's like saying there's no life jackets in the lifeboat that we don't have. There's a drum kit and a portrait of Miss Peel from the Avengers. I ask about the drums. Nothing but head shakes too. I never wanted to slap my big brother harder. Thanks to my two bum fingers, I can't play a damn thing and Saint can't either. I raise my voice. I don't suppose you have a clarinet lying around, I ask. All around me, there's just a sea of confused and ugly. Okay, I say, plan B. Everybody grab a drum. Saint, you sing the riff of A Whole Lot of Love. I'll do the words. Dave, you drum it as best as you can. Saint says, I don't know that song. Turns out he's not a fan of Zeppelin. Doesn't know any of their music. I want nothing more to punch him in his annoying little face, but we got no time. The Trows are starting to mumble and look impatient. Meanwhile, me and the band of fools are struggling to find a song we all know. Eventually, Saint has a suggestion, and it's as stupid as all hell. But Goat Skull keeps glancing up at the king and then back at us like we're peeing into the punch bowl. So absent of any better ideas, me, Saint, and Big Dave perform Silent Night. I'm beating out a rhythm on a tom, and it turns out Dave has a nice singing voice. It almost cancels out Saint's toneless dirge. Still, we finish, and there is silence. Not that reverential silence like when their guy finished. No, this time it's a what-the-fuck-just-happened kind of silence. Then the king. A big grin splits his dinosaur ball sack of a face, and he starts laughing. Everyone else joins in, too. He runs down and holds his hands up to the harp dude, and it's pretty clear they're saying that he won. And he did too. It ain't even close. Goat Skull starts giving the really big pig dudes instructions, and they disappear and reappear with a pot. I don't think we're being asked to stay for dinner. I think we are dinner. I'm about to make a pointless stab at running for it, and then Big Dave walks by me, carrying the portrait of Emma Peel. Before I can ask what the hell he thinks he's doing, Dave walks right up to the king, goes down on his knees, and holds out the picture. The place goes silent. Like, pin drop, silent. Dave points at Miss Peel, and then at the king, and then back and forth. The king's eyes light up, and he does a little dance. Next thing I know, he grabs the picture and starts miming humping it. I mean, he's really going for it. And the rest of the trows, they're making excited noises. I have no clue what's happening now, although I notice a trow who's sort of female storming off, and I'm guessing she was the old queen. The harp guy starts playing music, and everyone is dancing. Well, apart from the king, who is naked, rolling around on a portrait now. Trows are grabbing our hands, encouraging us to dance too, and so, well, we do. The dancing goes on for a long time, but we don't care because the pot's disappeared, and that's got to be good news. After a while, Goat Skull comes up and hands me a glass of water. I'm really thirsty, and I don't want to be rude now that we're all getting on so well, so I drink it. I just had enough time to think it tasted funny when I hit the ground like a ton of bricks. Last thing I saw was the king dude pumping away on top of that portrait. When I woke up, I was back in the van with Big Dave and Saint, the bright sun pouring through the windscreen. The van was sitting back on the road, and someone was behind us in a Robin Reliant laying on the horn hard. Saint wound the window down and waved them by. I thought we might be in heaven, but a little old man Flamingus the bird as he drove by made me think again. We pulled over into the side and checked the back. Everything was there. Everything except the portrait. We all looked at each other. "Nobody will ever believe this," said Dave. I nodded. "We can't tell a soul," said Saint. "I'm a God-fearing man." There and then, without much more discussion, we decided to keep it to ourselves. We headed to Leicester and told anyone who asked that the van blew a tire. Maybe it was all a dream. I'll tell you this, though. Emma Peel, you know, the lady from the Avengers, she came to a show I was working at a few years later, and I swear her husband was a weird-looking dude who looked strangely familiar. Very familiar. A good dentist and a wash can only do so much. But they seemed happy. He must have one hell of a charming personality.
Thank you for listening to the Stranger Times podcast. If you've enjoyed it, then please leave a rating wherever you get your pods. It really does help. And the Stranger Times novel by C.K. McDonnell is out and is available from all good bookshops and some bad ones. And check out StrangerTimes.com for more weird news and to sign up to the newsletter, where you can also get yourself a sweet free ebook containing some Stranger Times short stories. This podcast is produced by Rob B at BEE, with Ed Wilson exec producing, and all materials are copyright McFlurry Inc. Limited. All of the short stories are written by me, C.K. McDonald, and the music is done by Alan McGuire, with John McCullough as musical Sven Gallagher.